Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm a part of it now. Here we have this opt-in page and this idea of
constantly give them
a more tools and a resource looking to be
sent over. The personal strength is a key to success in content marketing.
Here is your host, James Craddock.
Oh, good morning, everybody. This is the Oz of 4D, and we're here today with our co-host, and we have a guest on the way, and we have kind of a new approach to what we're doing. How's everybody? Good morning, Samantha. Good morning, Mr. Keys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, you are there. Awesome. Good morning, Siwar. Are you on the line with us?
Hello?
Hello, this is James. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, James. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You put a smile on my face. I have some other people on the line with us on the show that put a smile on my face every time I talk to them as well. I'd like you to meet Mr. Key. He is a partner and I was going to say partner in crime, but then I would be admitting to things that I keep telling everybody I'm not doing. No, he is our fearless leader in our systems, in the vision for a lot of what we do, and he comes to us all wrapped up in this bundle of grace that never ceases to amaze us. How's that for an intro, Mr. Key?
Well, that's pretty good. I can't wait to meet Mr. T. Hello, Mr. T.
Yes, I have heard a lot about you as well.
And Samantha Sweetwater is she brings us a level of language that I only wish I had command of. And Samantha has her own business in doing a variety of things around the emerging economy and cultural consciousness and liberated dance. And good morning, Samantha. Say hello.
Good morning. So nice to be here with you, Chua. Great to meet you.
So for listeners that are listening, if this sounds like, you know, we just walked into a boardroom and we're standing around introducing each other, that's a lot of what this show is going to be about. We are going to start breaking down the process and the progress that we are making in adapting our business systems here in a sustainable way to the emerging economy. And through this process, you know, this is 4D leverage. Our goal on this show is to open up your mind to the possibilities given the changing landscape of everything from technology to how content is being used and leveraged to just our pop culture and the way things are globalizing and whatever the case may be. And we bring in those who are movers and shakers into the show to exploit what they're doing and find out how that can create a opportunity for our listeners to start gravitating towards some new niches, some new ideas, some new approaches to old things they've been doing, and ultimately explain to you how we are going about creating a 4D business model that is sustainable and that also is holistic in nature and in format. So Mr. Key, he brings us the systematic ability to take all of these visions that we have and implement them into a larger whole. And when we bring along a guest like Chiwa, who is now joined our team as our 4D writer for our 4D story, we open up the conversation to all kinds of potential. So before we get any further, Chiwa, can you just give us a quick insight on who you are and your background and your three-minute sales or elevator pitch?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, dear, I'm talking to you. I'm sorry, I tend to talk fast.
Well, let's see. I am a multifaceted individual with a huge interest in writing and language. And for many years, I have been helping people publish books, write books. I've been ghostwriting books. I I edit books, I format books, I design covers, I do everything that has to do with books. That's what I've been doing for the last, well, I guess since 99. And prior to that, I published a magazine in Sedona, Arizona. Let's see, along the way, I've been a relationship coach and an NLP therapist, helping people change their emotions and the emotional landscape of their lives. And a linguist working with Native Americans, and I've delved deeply into Native American and Polynesian and East Indian spiritual paths. I'm sure I've done a few other things. My name means soarer of many flights. So somebody asked me once, oh, does that mean frequent flyer? I said, well, it's a little different than frequent flyer, but it means that I never know what I'm going to wake up doing tomorrow. So I guess that's my shorter than 3-minute elevator speech, but I think there you have me in a bottle.
That's awesome. It's nice to that reminds me of that. What was that show where they would skip time and they would not know where they were waking up and they'd have to react to the environment around them? Jumpers or something like that?
I vaguely remember that.
That's awesome. That's a great way to look at life. And really what the 4D age is all about, and Samantha can speak to this, is having that freedom and recognizing that really the power to get things done, where in the old school of thought, it's through, you know, crowbars and pure grease and elbow grease and muscle. We're coming to a place where we can finesse the inner power of our own personal being, and we can leverage technology to put that inner power out in mass force. And that's really what we do, is we amplify people's inner power.
Yeah, and from what I've seen, and I've only been with you a very short period here, but from what I've seen, each of you is a great amplifier. So when you all come together, oh my golly, what have we got here?
There we go. That's our new campaign slogan. Oh my golly, I like it. Samantha, kind of talk about what you bring to the table and what you've been doing this week with regards to moving into kind of more of a 4D sort of lifestyle and business.
Yeah, well, it's really fun to hear your background. I relate to it very strongly. I work a lot with Native American spirituality and cross-cultural mysticism. And anyway, what really came to mind as you were speaking is the way that the world is craving the feminine principle in every aspect of our lives, our leadership, our economy, our medicines. What I've been up to this week is building a new business platform for executive coaching and deep healing work that helps people to align their lives and their work with their soul's purpose. And it's just really exciting to see how 4D Story is creating a space where the marketplace can reflect people's real values.
Awesome. Mr. Key, you want to add to that?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. He's sitting over there in a dark place. So what we have on the table with so I'm just going to bring it back around to kind of where we're at right now and what we're moving towards, and throw a few things out there that everybody can talk about. But we are putting together our first our official 4D story that we will represent as a business. And a 4D story, of course, it gets shaped around some principles for marketing. We create the characters a certain way, and then we move it into a story that's related to the theme that we want to put forward. And so we're working on that aspect of it, but at the same time, we're building some sales teams. We're building some sales approaches that have to do with the experience related model of reaching out across the internet. You know, from a sales perspective, we don't sell like we did a decade ago or two decades ago. We spend more time trying to create an experience for the people that are around us. And from Chiwa's perspective of as a writer, that's what a writer does on a regular basis. Is that fair to talk to Chiwa? Is that a writer is trying to create a page by page experience in the mind of the readers to draw them into the next page or the next chapter? Chiwa? I might have lost Chiwa. Do I still have anybody else on the line?
Samantha here.
Oh, she
I'm
was
here.
Back.
You're not hearing me?
Oh, I guess.
No,
I guess
we couldn't hear
you.
We'd love to hear
there.
You.
Yes,
oh, now you're
totally
here.
Want to hear you.
Okay.
You might have been. You might have been muted.
Well, I wasn't, but you know, I did. I muted and unmuted, and now you can hear me. So hey. that's exactly what a writer does. You know, a writer has to create an atmosphere that brings that draws people in and gets them hanging and, you know, just wanting more, wanting to know what's going to happen on, and wanting to turn the page, and then you go to the next chapter, you know. So that, yeah, that's the next story in this case. The next the next little story within the big story.
In our process here, we're creating basically a 12-month marketing campaign that is based on a fictional story that's been hardwired to the theme, and the characters have been designed to express a certain element of the marketing message. So as we tell our story, we're able to kind of create that same empathy with the reader in each individual scene. We're able to create that kind of magnetic pull. You know, one of the things that we're all passionate about is helping individuals determine what that inner superhuman is that lives within them. And if it's a solopreneur, this is such a critical part of their business, right? They got to have clarity. They got to know what their powers are, and they got to know what their natural attractions to those things around them. I think we slough off the power and the credibility of just how much we each have our own level of natural attraction, right? I mean, somebody speak to that. There is this magnetic pull that all of us have that brings certain people into our viewpoint, right?
No,
it brings certain
true.
People, and it brings certain experiences. I mean, you know, the law of attraction works. And so
I like
you
how
are,
you say, yes, keep going, sorry.
And who you are, you know, creates everything that you experience. So when you're clear on who that central what was it you called it? Superhero, I guess, something like that. That you are, when you're clear on what that is, then you can attract the things that are magnetized by that, as opposed to the things that you think you don't want, but you keep praying for with all your fears and your scaredy thoughts.
Yeah, so, I mean, on a soul level, we each manifest a circle of archetypes, a constellation of archetypes, and then we each come together in a constellation of souls and create the opportunities that we're actually naturally aligned with. The way I look at it is that what we're always doing is we're always emanating these archetypes, and where our success lies is in actually bringing them forward in an unarmored, unguarded, completely revealed way. And part of the attraction to that is allowing our visions to be fleshed out and known and shared as stories, as our hearts, as our passions, as our skills, also as our wounds, which actually is part of the gift that shapes our wisdom and the things that we can offer to other people on the journey on this planet where we're all learning together. And the way I kind of look at the experiences as this constant exchange between affinity, reality, and communication, and what we're doing in the constellation, it's the ARC triangle, is we're always tending what's possible in our lives and the lives of others through affinity, shared reality, or not shared reality, and communication. And that's how the whole thing moves forward.
If to add to that, I would say that when you're writing out something and or when you're talking about something, the choice of words that's being used is very powerful in attracting the type of people. The psychometric assessments made, and the psychometric assessments for every person is different, and a particular type of people, a particular pattern of people, they use similar words. They don't go and use words which are beyond their communication styles. For example, a person who is very visual would use the words like, yes, I see it. And if a person who is auditory would use the words, I hear it, I hear it. So there's a choice of words that differ, and people who are of the same type can relate to it better. And it goes beyond just choice of words. It's all about the entire communication. Do you use a longer sentence or do you use a shorter one? There's a style and pattern of people who are attracted to shorter sentences. Some people prefer bullet points, and some would like very extremely long messages, very comprehensive messages with lot of emotions added to it. So yeah, the words and the way we write it, the way we communicate it, the way we speak about it, it all attracts a particular type of people who are more similar to what we are, or people who are more the other side of the people who like more of what we are.
And what's critical here is the clarity of the individual you're talking to and the clarity of the person putting out that message. It's what content marketing does is it aligns the clarity of two unconscious beings. I mean, that really is the element behind it. That's why when you get clear about yourself, and that's why when you understand which words work for you, you know what kind of people you're going to attract just by using those words. I've often referred to the dating world and some of the dating gurus, and a very powerful element to teach to prospects who are buying dating software or dating advice, I should say, is this law of attraction, is that when you understand who you are and you find a mate who understands who they are, the two of you can almost grunt. I mean, it's kind of like, and you can even mess up. You could say the wrong things. You can even be rude to some degree. And the person on the other end of that attraction mechanism, and dating is just such a transparent example, they are simply attracted to an unconscious charismatic that they probably themselves can't even put into words. And so when we approach the market with that, content becomes our medium by which to interact throughout the masses with just the people that understand who we are. And so by creating story and putting that in the middle, or creating content that is specifically engineered around that message of our clarity, it creates this connection with people that is completely unconscious. And when you approach whatever it is you write that way, Now, Chiwa, my question is, when you approach a character in a story and you know that character is in a certain setting and you want that character to connect with the reader, are you thinking of it on this unconscious level, or do you somehow go through a formula that makes sure your character stimulates the reader's demographic that you're going after or whatever? To what degree do you apply this logic to a scene or a character's description or whatever the case may be?
Oh, well, I would say I don't work with an overt formula, but I have within myself an understanding of what makes a character. And so I check to make sure that all of those elements are there. So we have, you know, the strengths and the weaknesses. We have the likes and the dislikes. We have the sensory channel, like Mr. T was talking about, within which this person, with which this person is most prone to express under stress, because we all use all the sensory channels, but when we're under stress, we kind of narrow down to one. And I look at, you know, the relationships, how this person is going to relate to all of the other characters, And I build a whole little piece of the constellation that Samantha was talking about for this character before I ever start writing. So it's very clear to me how this character is going to act in any given situation.
That is,
and what
I
it's going to feel.
That. Yes, that gives it a kind of a systematized approach so that you maintain integrity with the character as you move forward. Connect to
yeah.
it, the clarity of the character and the experience. Talk about that connection between those two, because, you know, our sales approach is to move forward with experience and find out what it is our client wants to experience in their highest vision for themselves or their business or their company that they work for, or just that project. And when we can grasp that, then we understand what it is that we really need to serve as a business, and we have so many resources we can come alongside of them. But at the same time, often we're dealing with somebody on the other end that is not clear themselves. So take us through this connection between the experience and the clarity, and you just kind of paralleled it in the fictional character that the more clear you get on him, the easier it is to stay within his experience.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand your question, James.
Just connect, relate to us the power of clarity inside of either a person or a character and how that relates to the experience that they have.
Well, the more clarity you have in whatever experience you're having, the more that experience will mean to you, and the more you'll be able to take that experience and use it to move on to the next experience and create the kind of experiences that you want.
I like the self-feeding concept there, how you weave that in. Samantha, I know that, and I know Karnika as well, we kind of all have this take on how we go about crafting our own experience, crafting, you know, what it is that we want that moment in time to look like between us and someone else, whether we're in a sales call or whether we're trying to influence somebody, you know, in some other way. We're always doing this influence thing.
Yeah, I mean, what came up for me a little bit back in the conversation was sort of a polarity between masculine language and feminine language that I just wanted to point
yes.
out. It's really interesting because,
yes.
James, when you said systematize, my whole system shuts down. And for me to craft an optimal whole systems experience for myself, I'm going to feel into empathy and accuracy. I want it to feel like a fit. And I want to feel it in a way that I can feel it in my heart. For me, like, and I'm a whole systems, you guys know me, I'm a whole systems mega geek, but I don't do it from a place that's quote-unquote systematized. I do it from a place of feeling. So that would be more the feminine language and the feminine principle.
Yes.
Similarly,
it's like I create from the inside, and I start with a little fudge, and then I grow it organically from there.
Totally.
And creating the character.
Totally.
And it is the system. There is it creates the system, but it's not an externally exposed, an externally imposed system.
Right. And I mean, similarly with myself, I'm not looking to fulfill bullet points. I'm looking for a feeling tone. And the language I use in my own life with it is following the feel good, which means it feels accurate to my soul's prayer, which doesn't always mean it feels good, quote unquote, like happy. It means that it feels accurate to my own growth and striving and expansion and learning.
Exactly.
And yeah. So
what
I love that polarity, though. I think that polarity is really useful because it goes back to that the sociometrics of the language that Karnika was talking about earlier and how different people make these choices.
And so in your own perspective, you have created a frame or a model, and whenever that model is true, you get a gut feeling. I mean, you actually can recognize truth out of simply comparing it to that model that you have created. And I think that's what we do, is we create a systematized model around a business or around a product or whatever the case may be that is able to magnify and amplify that organic gut feeling, that unconscious person that you know that you can trust, that you know is who you are. And when the two come together, we are able to, without any change of what you're doing, we're able to amplify that very core idea that you are putting forth.
Yeah. And you know, when you were saying, Samantha, about the differences between a male language and feminine, like masculine language and feminine language, is very, very real. And yet, as you were saying, they work together. And so there's no opposition here, really. But sometimes there's a little difficulty of understanding, of bridging the difference in
that's good.
In alignment there.
Absolutely. I mean, people experience a lot of conflict between those two often. I mean, there's often a huge void.
Oh, in relationships. I mean, so many relationships fall apart just because they may be saying something that if they understood each other, there would be no problem between what one person's saying and what the other person's saying. But it's like there's ships passing in the night, and the communication just doesn't happen.
Well, and I see that in emergent business paradigms too, because some of the emergent the values in emergent business paradigms are more feminine and relational, mm-hmm. and like the metrics for what is success are different than more traditional metrics for success, and it leads to the schizophrenia a lot in business owners, and because they're still doing both and kind of surfing between the two without integration. And that, to me, that's where one of the places I see just the most magnificent opportunity through storytelling.
So
in creating content, whether it's story-based or just raw content or whatever, is there a rule of thumb or a guide that we can use to switch between the feminine and the masculine voice in how we approach it? Is it as clear as a left brain, right brain kind of delineation, or where do we start drawing those lines so that we can pull from each of those resources and put them in the right place? It's kind of like, you know, ego and self, when they mix together, they get confused, but when they're separated and you leverage them for what they are, they're very powerful. How do we approach that?
Well, I would say there's absolutely no hard and fast law to it, but the key is getting those two sides to talk to each other and explore how their interest is shared, and also explore the battle between them. It's like, I mean, one of the places I see it playing out is with men in the business realm who are more embodied in the feminine principle, and women who are more embodied in the masculine principle. I mean, that gets really interesting, and that actually would be an interesting play to play out. Sometimes it gets unified from the outside, and sometimes it gets unified from the inside.
Yes, and I think we're in the period of creating the template, or whatever the word was, James, that you asked about, that we're a guide for doing this. We're in the process of creating that.
So it sounds like maybe not just, like I said initially, a mindset of feminine or masculine, but in context, I think every single person can be addressed in both of these, and from the element of allowing the inner 4D character of each of us to speak, it sounds almost as if, you know, a fictional writer allows their characters to lead them. They allow them to talk, and once they're built, they kind of tell the story, and the writer becomes, just kind of this intersection between all the characters that brings it into the physical world sometimes. I mean, it looks to me like there is this opportunity to kind of be that person in the sales cycle, in the content marketing cycle, is that when we speak with clarity and we put out scenes or whatever the case may be, that we're synthesizing, we're actually creating a place for them to open up and them to start kind of being more of who they are without trying to force it, without doing anything else other than calling up that inner character out of each element, out of each process, out of each person.
That's where it gets really exciting. That's where writing is fun, and that's where doing business, you know, is inspirational, really, because you're pulling out of each one who they really are, so that what you create in the amalgam is something much greater than you could have imagined had you tried to create it from your mind.
So I think then if we were to allow, from Samantha's perspective here, the feminine side of our character to lead us during a period of time of whatever we're doing, maybe in some of the content we create, we would start to be able to analyze what we get back and understand how that voice is impacting our market, and then maybe shift to a masculine and do the same process. And now you split test both sides of your perception of those two different approaches, and you're able to take what comes back and recognize, okay, this is the message that I'm sending out there that's going to strike a chord in everybody with the right kind of balance between this masculine and feminine. And I like that approach because it gives us a new way to approach split testing. It just gives you kind of a new take on how your voice is affecting the person on the other end. Now, Mr. Key, when it comes to process, if a client comes to you or a rep comes to you and says, look, we're wanting to find out the voice of our prospects, and we want to know how much they're leaning to the feminine and how much they're leaning to the masculine, and which one do they respond better to, how do we go about that in a strategic way at the very beginning to cull assets and to start to create a formulative plan, leveraging sales funnels, leveraging content, everything that we're going to put out there in order to empower and amplify this person's existing voice and message?
Okay. When it comes to all these areas, we don't call it as masculine and feminine part, but we call it as rational and emotional sides. Those two are the exact same things represented in the other words as well. When we use this, it becomes more easier to contain, and it becomes more easier to evaluate and organize it. So every buying decision in the process is made emotional. Buying decisions are always emotional. But one thing that makes a difference is what can hook them up for a longer period, what can interest them, what can sustain their interest until they complete the buying process. So when we go back to analyze this, we don't look at the target audience as companies. We look at the target audience as individuals within those companies. So what do those individuals need? What are their motivations? By end of the day, motivation by itself is a very emotional thing. But what is the rational layer around the motivation? Once we understand these areas, it's all about tying in the right ratio. So every pitch, every sales pitch, or every sales message, or any piece of content that goes out there should have both of this. It cannot just go with one and make its way through it all, because if it goes with the rational part and it doesn't appeal to the emotional side of a person, it doesn't say a story, or if it doesn't have the emotional side, then the person might not be able to relate to it. It might just become a piece of statistics, or it might just become a piece of bunch of logic, which might not be something that he can take it forward with and be part of or relate to. So the right mixture with the right places, for example, having the emotions at the start might not be a good thing for everyone. In some cases, having the emotional things or stories or all these areas in the start might hook them up. So based on whom we are approaching and when we are approaching, we add these elements in the right way. For example, let's say you're getting to see a piece of content, and that piece of content is advertised to you, or that piece of content is sent across to you during your working hours. If you open and that starts with a story, or if that starts with an emotional piece that you can relate to, you definitely like it, you want to read it, but that is something that you feel will take a lot of your time, and you're in workplace and you want to do it later, so you bookmark it. But when you bookmark, the chances of you going back to read it is much lesser. But if you get the same piece during your off hours when you're at home, you'd be reading it much longer and more effectively because you have time at your hands. But just imagine when you're sending the same content during their work time, but it starts with the logic. It says 76% of people respond to a message sent, you know, with these parameters. So you start with the statistic, you start with the fact, you start appealing to the rational mind. They would open it and you start talking rational things. And in the middle, you start inserting the emotional and you start inserting the story and you start talking about all those things there. That hooks them up. That makes them read continuously. That makes them continue till the end of it. So it's a matter of where you have it, when you have it, and to what extent you have it. Always closing. Whenever we close something, again, the closing can be an emotional close or it can be a rational close. And again, it's based on the research and the logic that comes behind it. So a same target market to a same individual, you can create two types of content, one with each of them leading and with different mixture and types, and you can use that at two different times, because by end of the day, you cannot reach a person by appealing only to one side. You have to appeal to both sides, but these factors will determine how and when you do it.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. I mean, a person makes their decisions emotionally, and then they rationalize what they've done. I've seen that a lot.
Samantha, in that process, do we accurately surmise your way of approaching it, or do we miss something, or how does that shape up?
Well, I would say yes and. I love what Karnika just shared, and I always try these things on to see if they are true for me, and I'm like, oh yeah, I only answer emails that serve my immediate needs during the day. I loved that. That was so useful. What I would say about, I would flesh out what we call the emotional, and I think actually this is important in the emergent market, is the framework I use is that there are five fields of consciousness, actually six if you include the mental field, but the other five are instinct, emotion, empathy, intuition, and the psychic field. And I say this as sort of like a high wizard. I will say I have done a lot of marketing that has succeeded because of the intuitive and psychic fields, which in common marketing language we would call emotional. But increasingly, as people wake up, they're making choices from a variety of different fields that we would all lump into the emotional. But actually, if you really get what's going on, they're different. So I would just add that to the map and say that depends on a person's level of awakening. And sometimes that quote-unquote emotional choice is actually an instinctive choice for safety. And sometimes it's an emotional choice for wanting to feel love and connection. And sometimes it's an empathic choice for wanting to feel connected to everything else. And sometimes it's an intuitive choice of like, I kind of just know that the world's going this way. And actually that those aren't purely emotional choices. That fleshes out our market and our clients and how people are actually making decisions.
What were your five breakdowns of emotional? I got the intuitive and psychic at the end. What were the first ones?
Instinct, emotion, empathy, and then the psychic and intuitive fields. The psychic field is a subset of the intuitive field, but worth naming.
Sure. That's awesome. I like how you did that, the emotional piece, because in a 4D story, when we create a single scene or a single embellishment, the first question we ask is, you know, where is our audience, or how is this scene connecting to our audience, at what emotional level? And then we want to know what emotional level we're trying to bring them to in the scene, because every scene has to have an emotional transition to have any kind of feel of moving forward. And then that tells us the transitional emotion. It lets us know where they are going to be at the height of that scene. And we can decide from that point what it is that we want to market to them based on the emotion we know we'll be targeting in that one single piece. But this works with content marketing as well. If you're putting out a single piece and you understand these five elements of the emotional piece that you are working from, you know better how to align your content. And if you understand that your demographic is more keen to a specific element of this breakdown overall, then you know that all of the pieces of content that you put out need to be weighed in that particular element. So that gives you so much focus. And that's the idea behind creating content that has this strategic alignment to it. It's why the holistic business place is going to continue to emerge and continue to gain speed, because when you have the tools and the skills and the ability to go into a person's life and understand unconsciously who they really are and then align that with the right words, the right approach, and the right connection, you have a natural, you know, the law of attraction starts working for you, and you have a natural gravitational pull of those prospects towards you. Why? Because you have a value that you're going to be able to give them that helps them, and it kind of creates this kinetic thing. I want to, in our model of kinetic avatars, which are the eight characters that mold the marketing message and hold it in a space in a 4D story without being overt, each of those elements, I want to throw them to you and just have you identify their overall, give you an idea how they work. Tell me if they're male, if they're masculine or feminine predominant. I realize you may have to split hairs in some of them, but give me what you think would be the primary phase of each one and be curious. And we would start with the protagonist. Is the protagonist, and I realize the protagonist can be male or female in a storyline, but the protagonist itself, this is the customer in our marketing experience. Is the customer in general being vulnerable at this position because they have a need and that they have something that the product is going to solve? Does that make them masculine or does that make them feminine?
You're asking me?
Sure.
Can we answer
either one of anybody?
Or?
Yeah, I would love to hear what everybody thinks. Is the customer itself a masculine model or a feminine model in today's environment?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, in the old environment, it was a feminine in that the seller pushed whatever they had and the customer received. But I think the customer is taking a much bigger role now in the whole process, and it's no longer that push out and then they have to take what they get kind of situation. The customer is helping to mold what's going on, but I don't think that's necessarily. I think that talking about this in terms of a masculine and feminine dichotomy is a little off base.
James,
I really applies here.
I think that, you know, for example, if you're using premium products, luxury brands, then if you're getting specific there, you could start to pinpoint and say, okay, these people, these buyers would be more feminine because they are not doing it by need. They are doing it because that's that's just a pleasure added thing. So it appeals to the emotions. It appeals to the lifestyle they want. It appeals to the, the kind of intuitive needs that they have beyond the logical basic need. So, but if you go and talk about the same thing for something that you buy out of, Amazon, a book, you're not going to do that based on a very, that's going to be a masculine decision. You have five books, you're going to look at what every book provides you, and that is an emotional side to it, but it is going to be more of a masculine decision than anything else. So it cannot be a standalone thing. It is going to be more based on who the product is and who the client is or who the end users are, and then you customize and design this according to that.
Yeah, I agree.
I like this.
And it's not something that can be said overall, you know. It's not that the masculine and feminine dichotomy doesn't apply. It's just that it applies differently in every case.
So, Samantha,
Go ahead, James. Well, what I was saying is I'm thinking of the constellation of needs that might be served, say, by our product. And it's like wanting to exponentially increase impacts, to reach new communities, to get a higher ROA on existing content, to feel really good about the vehicle and have fun using it, to feel proud of it, as like I'm thinking of people who are already business leaders, and one of the values they have is they want to use tools that they think are cool and that would be cool to their friends and their colleagues. And then another would be that it's easier than stuff they've done before.
So all three of you have given your perspective on this, but I'm still going to play devil's advocate and ask, in our climate and where we're going over the next 5 years, 10 years, whatever, is the protagonist more leaning towards a feminine role or a male role overall? And I realize it breaks down into different niches, that makes sense. But is the climate, the environment, either one?
I would say it is going to go towards more feminine role.
Yeah, I think it's moving. You know, the old model was very masculine, and it's changing. So, yeah.
And what,
right now,
and
people
what is
are,
the key component?
Oh, yeah, right now,
well,
people are more towards the life purpose.
Well, and the
go
other
ahead,
is
Keith,
building
finisher.
Relationships.
Mm.
So, right,
yeah,
right now, people are... go ahead, go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm trying to get what Key is saying.
So, right now, people are moving more towards their life's purpose. They're trying to understand deep within, okay, getting a job and doing a job for a few years and retiring is okay, but what do I need more than that? What makes my
yeah.
life what it is?
Yeah.
What is my legacy I'm going to leave behind? So people are thinking about this, and with the entire startup era, people are trying to bring their own solutions to the world, and bringing solutions to the world has a feminine part to it. It's trying to come up with something that has its own values apart from just the raw solution. They're not trying to just come up and sell us with something, but they have that feeling, intuitive, emotional, all the other things, all those layers are strongly building the culture. So companies right now are not just hierarchies, they're a culture. And culture by itself is it is not masculine. So that there's a whole movement happening around. There's a change in shift of people's thinking in personal lives, in business, in organization, in every walk of life, every area, in parenting, and even with children. They're all starting to think in this new way, and it is not masculine.
Samantha. Go ahead.
Oh, I agree with that. I mean, the other thing that I think is convergent with that is that people are coming back to the value of relationship. And the culture as a whole is moving from being very me-centric to more we-centric. And people are building really successful businesses, not just because they dominate, but because they collaborate. And that the new paradigm
Ooh.
Is much more relational and collaborative, and that's actually way more resilient, because then the risk is shared across individuals and individual businesses, and everyone can grow together. A lot of the cutting-edge work that's being done in regenerative technologies is all about that collaborative infrastructure, like substructure, because you can't bootstrap an industry up when its suppliers all suck. So everyone actually has to work together in a relational paradigm, which is, you could say, is a feminine principle. And similarly, increasingly in medicine, people are discovering that the allopathic model is only a piece of the solution. It's not in and of itself bad, but to get people to optimal health requires a whole network of providers and caregivers and relationships to heal people. I mean, that's what we've discovered about addiction, depression, the current medical paradigm of medicating people for all kinds of reasons, rather than putting them in a healthy ecosystem of relationships. And that's what doctors are seeing.
We
We're
are going to take a quick commercial.
Go ahead.
Carry on with that.
Commercial.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick up where you just left off, and then we're going to talk about how this affects us relating to male and females, but their experience, and how this is affecting what it is they want to get out of their growth pattern professionally and personally. Stand by.
4D Story is an entertaining way to promote products and services in both online and offline environments. By broadcasting a fictional story with characters engineered around real life, 4D Story engages fans and encourages viral sharing.
Ever wish that you could take the mystery out of search engine results? Well, now you can.
Discover how you can dominate the first three pages of Google with Key Difference Media. Go to keydifferencemedia.com/dominate. Content marketing unlocked.
All right, I never realized how loud that second commercial is in your ear. That's beautiful. So let's take this into the realm of politics, because now what you're really doing is you're applying this to, very closely applying this to not just the protagonist, but also the product that they're selling or the voice or the message or the thing that they're trying to get out across. How does this feminine principle start to apply? And really, this feminine principle can be called the experience as well, because it sounds to me like it's these emerging principles that are shaping our desire to have an experience over to just have a linear kind of lifestyle. So let's take it into the realm of politics and kind of massage it there.
Well, as I look at it, this country, the United States of America, was founded on a feminine principle. It was the principle of let's try out something new. Let's get away from this linear government from the top down to the bottom and create something that, you know, we call we the people, right? Something that is governed by those who are actually being governed. And then, as history went on, the masculine principle of capitalism became very, very dominant. And now what you're seeing is more and more, I mean, like, if I look at, I mean, I'm simplifying this grossly, but if I look at what's happening right now and I look at, say, the Bernie Sanders campaign, which I don't really look at as so much of a campaign for the presidency as it is as a campaign to inspire the people to believe that they can have an influence on what's happening around them from the core of who they are and the core of the life they really want to live, as opposed to from the idea, the ideas passed down to them by government and the corporate environment. So I see that we're coming back to a more feminine expression in it's seeking to make itself felt in the political environment.
You bring about a very interesting aspect of this experience relation, whether it's the sales perspective or whether it's just our connectivity level or our engagement level in social media. And what you bring into my awareness is this collaboration piece. You know, as I've approached a lot of people and asked them, you know, what kind of experience do you want to have? What is your greatest aspiration in life? And it amazes me, in alignment with what you just said, how often that response is triggered, it includes how they want to collaborate with others. That response is never, I want to sit atop a mansion, you know, and rule the people by looking down at my nose. It's not that response ever. It's always, I want to find the power in others and let it go, or I want to engage with others and accomplish something. And from the level of our engagement, if we look at every piece of content that we're creating and we're asking ourselves that question, am I including a cooperative element, a feminine principle in this piece of content, then I know that this piece of content, number one, better fits the conversation's overall unconscious leaning, but it also will strike a chord with those who are closer to it, and you can literally start to gauge that piece of content with a little more finesse on how strong or how weak you make those elements of the feminine in that piece of content by simply crafting your voice, crafting the context in which it's in, crafting the colors, crafting the picture that you use. Does this make sense? I mean, now you're able to take a piece of content and really lean it unconsciously towards the demographic of your target audience, not just based on their features or their physical attributes or the other elements that we have traditionally gone about using to create a prospect and to influence a prospect. We have 5 minutes left, so let me ask this question. Male or female, are the products that are rolling out on the market, and let's talk about, I mean, let's consider everything from new technology to leading edge, wacky tech, I mean, things that we never thought we'd see in our lifetime, whether it's driverless cars and artificial intelligence or whatever the case may be, 3D imaging, holograms, things of this nature. Are these products that are coming out, are the way that Uber and the flattening of competitive places, conversation, everything, how it's globalizing, is that whole process more male in its aggressiveness or more female in its cohesiveness? And the products that are coming out to support it that we're going after.
I think we can joyously say that it's both, and it's as I look at it, it's feminine in its desire to express from you know, to hold nothing back and to innovate, but it's masculine in its desire to spring forth and the drive behind it, and it takes that combination to really make it work. I feel very, very positive and hopeful about technology, and because it is a blend of the two.
I totally agree. And like from a women's market standpoint, it would be something like systems that, like to a female solopreneur standpoint, you would say something like systems that still feel good to your woman's mindset or to your woman's body. And to a man, you would say succeed and feel good, you know, and live with your heart open.
But the products that are emerging, are they male or female in
the product,
their
both.
Overall leaning?
I would
There's
say
integration.
How about the business
I would
models?
Say that there are
Let's
two see. Types of products which are coming up right now, both serving their individual markets. And the number of products that's coming on the feminine side are higher. They're just coming out everywhere. I mean, for you to share things, for you to collaborate, for you to you know, feel good, for you to plan some wonderful holiday, a lot of feminine things are coming up. At the same time, for those platforms to really survive, exist, the masculine parts like the project management segments and things which forms as a base above which these can be built on are also coming. So I would say each one is building on one another. Only when the masculine base is there, the organized and logical parts, all this you know, feminine products are being built up, but the same masculine base needs to be marketed using the feminine base. So there are these two products, but they are interhelping each other. They're collaborating among each other at different levels for them to sustain. But the verdict still goes to the increased number of feminine products that's coming up right now.
So there's a larger number of feminine products. That's kind of what I was thinking, but wanted to kind of – does everybody else agree that there's a larger volume of feminine products over the male perspective type products, even though there's both? Okay. Well,
I think we're heading into a more feminine paradigm. It's unclear to me just exactly what we're talking about when we use the word product.
That's okay. I like how you just explained that. Now let me take it to the next level of: are we entering a more feminine or male perspective in this conversation we're having of business systems and how businesses approach everything from their HR department, motivating their people, to training them, to how they interact with their customer and the service that they provide overall and the experience they provide overall?
I mean, I would say that businesses that succeed in the new market do both well. I mean, that's the shift. The shift is not from a masculine to a feminine. It's from a masculine to an integrated masculine and feminine. And that's where success lies.
I agree.
Yeah.
So it's I like that. So it's adding more. So we are adding more feminine, but we're not necessarily tilting the scales. Maybe we're approaching a paradigm of balance more so than ever before.
The feminine, let me say this, the feminine never wants to dominate. The feminine wants everybody to be happy. wants everybody to work together. So, you know, the feminine side is integration. It's not, it would never be dominance. It's a masculine concept.
So that's a powerful awareness when it comes to content, because if I'm looking at my content this way, I'm recognizing the piece of the content that needs to maybe be brought into balance in order to approach this with that, the feminine not over dominating, but the male's thrust or the male's given persona is in balance with what that feminine piece is. So that gives content kind of a rule of thumb by which to gauge that balance. I like that,
yeah,
that approach to this entire kind of conversation. We've just come up on our 1 hour mark and want to let our listeners know that need to jet out. We appreciate you being with us and listening to our conversation up to this point. We're not going to end it. What we are going to do is continue some of this high-level conversation and maybe even bring it down to some very specific action items that we want to discuss. So if you're a listener that needs to peel out, then Godspeed, and hope that you have a blessed and a profitable day. Tune in to us anytime you like on Wednesday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., where we will be bringing the movers and shakers of the 4D emerging economy to this roundtable discussion to find out what they're doing and then to show how we can amplify what they are doing in order for all of us to create the brave new world that we're approaching. But from this point forward, we're just going to continue the discussion and invite those that have the time and the desire to stick around to stick with us. So as we approach content with kind of these multiple perspectives and different ways of looking at it, and we see that the client itself is the whole of what we really want to do is look at our entire process, and somebody says, this is what I want to get out of my life. We can look at that and realize that they are drawing from a feminine perspective to even desire to create more of an experiential approach to life as opposed to having it more linear, more goal-oriented, or maybe even if it was more finance-oriented, et cetera. And for us to speak to that element, whether it's in story or not. Now, as we do this, there are three major obstacles within the marketing message that we have to eliminate an argument for in order to cause a customer to know, like, and trust us. And in the model of a 40s story that undergirds it with the way that we put these characters together, the antagonist is actually that inability to know, like, and trust. So the prospect is, the customer is that protagonist. And the antagonist is not the competitor to us. It is that customer's inability to know, like, and trust us. That's what is keeping us from selling our product. Because once they know us, once they like us emotionally, and once they trust us, there is nothing, as long as they have the funds to transfer for the value that they're going to get from us. And once they recognize that their sidekick and our mentor can get together, which is our product and their need for the product, it just naturally happens. So the approach that we want is to create an experience for those prospects who recognize that we have or that we want to show our value to. We create that experience for them. We lean towards we make sure that we include enough feminine to create a balanced approach and to create that experience that 99% of our prospects are going to want to walk towards us on. And then there's three components that we want to address, obstacles, in order to get them to know, like, and trust us. And my question is, are all three of these obstacles feminine in leaning, or are they masculine, or do we again approach it with put enough feminine to balance them out and you're going to have your results? The first one is skeptical. The skeptical objection to whether a customer knows, likes, and trusts me. Is that skeptical male logic driven or feminine feminine driven?
Well, again, James, to help you flesh this out, I would say that with most of the people I know, probably each one of these objections has both a masculine and a feminine dimension. Like, the skepticism might be first emotional and and have to do with, like, I've tried this before, why should I trust people, these people. And the feminine would have more, excuse me, the masculine would have more to do with looking at the numbers and not being sure if they're worth it.
And
okay,
I think it also
three,
changes.
So you know the...
I think
ahead,
it also
sorry.
Changes based on the person. For example, if I am personally looking at something with my pattern of psychometric pattern, I would definitely start being skeptical with my logic first. Emotions would come at the end, far end, and logic is going to take its priority. So again, it depends on the type of person they are and the kind of life that they have had. And, you know, the mixture of both.
Let me back this up just a second, because both of you are mingling the three objectors. There's three objectors. One of them is skeptical. The second one is emotional. And the third one is logical. So these are three separate mindsets, if you will. And what I'm trying to identify is the skeptical mindset a feminine mindset or a masculine mindset in and of itself, not including the emotional component that influences it, and not including the logical component, just skepticism itself, not believing, always wanting to have proof, always wanting to, you know, read all of the different functionality of the product in order to, you know, take away that skepticism. What element feeds skepticism more so?
I think skepticism is more—it's a mixture of the other two things that you described. Rather than it being a separate entity, it feeds from the emotion, it feeds from the logic. It doesn't stand alone; it's a byproduct.
I agree. I can see how definitely how emotional and logical are two sides of the same coin. But skepticism is like—it's not on the same level.
So what you guys are doing is you're expressing what I actually wrote out in the book. All of these, you're right, it's always two of these kind of create the third one. Think about it, emotional and skepticism can create quite a logical confrontation, yeah? Because I think Samantha just kind of gave us a scenario. Or skepticism and logical get together, and that's an emotional wreck. You know, somebody that just absolutely can't believe anything and has to pinpoint it down and da-da-da-da. So along the lines, we're always trying to find the two that are creating the third. And I think that gives us – go ahead. Somebody just – I think –
Well, and I would say generally we create skepticism as a mental distance around things we have feelings about.
Nice.
So – like, skepticism is a stance, and it's kind of like digging in your heels and being like, well, I don't know, you know, and it's a stance of non-action. And
yeah.
It will have a number of metrics behind it that are both mental and emotional, but ultimately it's rooted in feeling tones, but it's justified mentally.
So if if skepticism is a stance, how do you get somebody to move from that stance? Do you take a feminine approach, or do you force it with maybe that physical approach or that masculine approach?
Well, as Carnica says, it depends, but either way, you don't force it. Skepticism rarely moves when forced.
Right.
Because skepticism is a protection stance, so if you force protection, you get more resistance. So that's a law. So with skepticism, you want to listen to emotional objections and mental objections, and you want to approach that with you could either approach it on a mental level with a solutionary model that's like, well, what didn't work for you before and how might this work for you better or solve a problem that you don't think can be solved? And on an emotional level, it's like, you know, I think of things with entrepreneurs like, we're not going to waste their time, we're not going to waste their money, how is this easier, more effective, more efficient, more fun, you know, how is it a better solution in every way? And that's more of the mental dimension.
So Chiwa, how do you from a fictional standpoint, forget all the marketing stuff, if you're moving a skeptical character through a story, and obviously their intention in a story is to add to the conflict, which creates the, you know, which makes the protagonist shine. But how does that protagonist ultimately approach removing that skeptical character from their path in order to accomplish whatever they are set out to in the story itself? Do you ever grapple with that on a character level? Or
sure.
Any of these, the emotional or the logical, but...
Sure. You're basically asking how do you overcome an objection, right?
sure, yeah, in a character, in a fictional setting, yes, absolutely.
And it depends. It depends. It depends on the character. And it goes back to everything that's just been said here. If a character is a more masculine character, one who thinks very logically and rationally, then you use a more logical and rational approach. You know, that's all that's going to work on that person. But, you know, nobody is totally that way, so it has to be tempered somewhat by an appeal to their emotion, and it's going to vary with each character, you know, what's going to... And that's part of what comes into the wonderful experience of creating something like this, why I love working as a writer, is that you get to experiment, and you have... you get to try out different things on the skeptic and see what works. Because ultimately good fiction is truth, and it comes out of the characters themselves.
There you go. Go ahead.
I also think that when it comes to a person, even if they are a very logical person, there are areas in their life when they would not use logic. So,
yep.
Even within a person, there are two or three or multiple segments, and they could have a different priority between the logic, emotion between them. And there might also be places where they're not at all skeptical. Anything you say, they're open to accept it. So, for example, if you look at more people, money is a place where they have a lot of skepticism involved. But if you talk about, you know, going out and networking somewhere or a particular event or something else along the lines which doesn't focus so much on selling them on something, they might put their the guards down. So it again depends on the segment of life and their past experiences there.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
So as we see, all of these elements are like tedious little strings that all have to be pulled at the same time in order to draw somebody into your funnel and bring them all the way through the process, which is, you know, that's a lot of strings, that's a lot of gates, that's a lot of bridges, you know, locks to make sure are all in place for the water to flow. And I think what we get out of story or out of changing our perspective into kind of this 4D process of looking at it, saying, all right, well, story gives us the power to literally break down their experience and get them involved in at this level, so that, you know, if we're talking to a prospect in our content marketing about the experience that they themselves want to have, and we are connecting with them on how we can amplify that experience and how we can come alongside and make more space for that experience, and we truly serve their experience, then what's happening is these objections disappear because they are the ones that are bringing, they're kind of creating the content of what we're talking about. They've created that space and filled it with their own experience. So now they're not skeptical of their own experience. They're not negatively emotionally charged towards it or logically critical. They're totally excited about, yes, this is the experience I want to have. And then it becomes a matter of relating to them in our content how we can add to that experience. But I think it gives us, if we take that approach and we know how to speak to that unconscious experience, it allows us to empower all of these or more of these inbound marketing threads, these magnetic ways of aligning who we are with that. Chiwa, what's harder to write, a fictional character that you relate to or a fictional character that you have to research, but because of your lack of relationship, does that contrast allow them to speak to you better, you know, to where you might fall into a rut with the ones you know real well, or is it the other way around? Would you rather personally write about somebody that you relate to, or would you rather take a non-related instance and go do the research and kind of construct that character out of, you know, with no preconceived tendencies?
Well, I'm more comfortable creating characters that I relate to, of course, because I already relate to them. But anything that you're writing, you need characters of that are going to create conflict together. You know, that are going to create tension and then resolve it. And so both are important. And so researching characters that I might not relate to in a natural way is important as a writer, as much as writing the ones that you naturally relate to. You need a full panoply of characters represented in the story.
You know, that's kind of crazy because the average landing page, the first thing you do is present the, you know, you give a big promise, but then you start presenting the fear and, you know, copy goes down that line. Present the fear, present it again, make it bigger, you know, keep rubbing it in and then present kind of a solution. Yet maybe we don't think to that level when we are writing an individual piece of content or strategizing in our content of how are we going to create this conflict in our prospect and at the same time give them an awareness of the resolution that we have for it. And relating to their experience seems to give us the leverage to make both of those things happen. It even seems that using somebody else's experience to create an environment where both of us can relate, which is really what fictional storytelling is doing in this process, is it's saying, okay, here's a completely magnificently entertaining environment that is constructed out of characters who are all representing these different elements of the marketing message, but as we get caught up in what they are doing, we are starting to identify unconsciously with our own selves. And
yes.
And so by go ahead.
And when that happens, what you're doing with what I see that you're doing with story in a marketing context is you are you're doing what teachers of sales training always tell you should do. You are overcoming the objection before it comes up in the customer's mind, and you're overcoming it through the characters.
Bingo.
That is
beautiful.
The beauty of story in a marketing context.
Couldn't have said that better myself. That is exactly what the power of this is. So when it comes to our amplification process, we begin by coming into a client's world to say, what is it that you're trying, you know, what is it you're trying to say, and to what extent, to what end are you trying to say that? And creating that clarity and that strategy means that we are going to be amplifying their true voice without all the layers or the filters or, you know, sometimes even features of our product can cause us to shroud the true magnetic connectivity of our voice to the client on the other end. So strategizing who we're talking to and what we're trying to say so that we can build that process in between is significantly key. And by doing it with story, and again, whether you're just creating a piece of content to tell an element of your business story or you're leveraging the experience level of a number of characters in a fictional setting, you're doing the same thing. You're creating a synthesization between them and you that is real, that is energy, that could be registered on some kind of rictometer if you could measure it that way. Right, Samantha? I mean, isn't this the beauty of the law of attraction and of the power of community and what this idea of bringing the feminine principle of experience to the table affords us? It gives us a new heterodyned fancy word for mixing signals to where we are then able to relate better and see these natural laws work on our behalf?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it creates a space where we can experience belonging.
And that space of belonging is what gives credence to awareness, because we now have space to become aware of who we are and what we can do, or whatever the case may be, even become aware of the prospect's value in their product. And that space, so we get the belonging. We create content that makes them feel like they belong to our conversation, which makes them aware, and that leads them to a place where we can converse with them about a choice. And that process, we use all of these elements to lead us down that path. But when we get there, we're now talking to a prospect that's totally bought in, has no objections to hearing our solution, and literally kind of moves from being a passive listener to an active participant, dare I say even somebody who becomes a champion of our cause, somebody who goes out there and opens up doors for us, et cetera. Does that all sound like we're really synthesizing these elements of the holistic approach and the 4D approach in what we're doing?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think it's a beautiful synthesis of the approach. I think I can't wait to see the first story arise and see how we engage people with it.
Okay, cool. But even on a moment-to-moment level, like when we're talking to someone or we're engaging a prospect or we want to create a new relationship to extend our network, this approach kind of tells us that we are going to be able to connect with people better if we start targeting people that are willing and able to hear us from the very beginning and structure it that way. So really what content marketing is, and 4D story in general, is an infrastructure that allows us to speak along that line without trying to figure out each individual detail as we work on it. And we can sense, I would think, Chiwa, through a story, can you not sense what a reader's reaction is when you get a response from them, or even as you're writing it, recognizing how they're going to interpret it?
Yeah, definitely. And I have also learned that no matter what my sense is, there will be readers who will interpret it differently.
Ah, but those are readers that theoretically are not perfectly aligned with you. Maybe they came in, heard part of it because of a partial alignment, and then brought the rest of their being with them.
Yeah, they have preconceptions that are different from mine.
So from a business building standpoint, they start to fall outside of your target market, would you say? They start to fall outside of the hearers?
Yeah.
As long as your product is in alignment with who you are, I guess.
Yes. I mean, we've been talking around this all for an hour and a half now, I think. But the whole key to this whole thing is defining your audience, defining the client's audience, and writing to that audience, and widening
it
out as much as possible, but still writing to that audience.
So finding that single entity that you're talking to, when you write a story, are you writing it to 50,000 people or ever how many you hope will read it? Or are you picking a single individual that you're trying to influence and have this understanding or belief that everybody around them will pick up on some element of what you're saying? Is that where clarity comes from?
I like to write to a single individual. I like to have such a clear idea of who the most ideal prospect is and write to that person. And then everybody else who is in any way aligned with that will pick it up. If you try to write to just the world in general, you're not writing to anybody, and it won't touch anybody. Stephen King says he writes to his wife. You know?
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Of anybody,
for his wife.
That's wild.
So I think, you need to have somebody in mind so that you always have something to bounce things against. You kind of know what their reaction is going to be, because not everybody's going to read it the same way, you know, and nothing is going to appeal to everybody. And you know, the sooner you get in agreement with that and just decide you're writing for the people who it will appeal to, the better your writing will be more quickly.
And Key, from an operational standpoint, when somebody comes to you with this kind of clarity, what have you seen that does for the value and the amplification result of their content?
Okay.
Do you have any examples?
Yeah. So when the clarity is already established, it's like they have the resources and there is this one straight line we need to go on, one small funnel where we need to force all the energies into. So the results would definitely be perfect because the language is perfect to that particular audience. They know to whom they're speaking, what they're appealing to, what they want and what they provide. Everything is in line. So it works like magic. So this system is exactly what we bring on. This clarity is what we bring on to any client for that matter. So it's not about one client as an example, but any client that we work with, this clarity has to be established at least to a basic level before we can go about doing anything. So any clients that we work with, any of our case studies which you find in keydifferencemedia.com/case-study, they all relate to this. You can see that the campaign always has one focused call to action. It has one singular message, one style of communicating across all different channels, and it focuses on one product of theirs. If they have 200 products, it still focuses on one starting point, one place where they can be funneled from, and the pitch on that particular page is also resonating with the same style. So it's all singular communication that is being used in marketing always for it to be successful.
And you bring up a good point. If we are dialed into one particular demographic, we're going to be able to much more clearly see what the one particular problem they have is going to need to be addressed.
Because what happens is when you go beyond one focus, you try to come up with a solution which fits both, and you try to take one sideways steps from two individual solutions to a midpoint where it appeals to both. But the problem with that is that the percentage it appeals from 100% becomes 60 or 50 or 40, which again hurts the sales page because the sales page has to appeal to both as well. So by end of the day, you're killing your conversion by half, or sometimes it just kills the entire campaign by itself.
So, yeah, you like to use that word dilute a lot. So every time, once you identify the clarity with which you're speaking and to whom you're speaking, you feel you have a very powerful force, but every time you add another element from somebody outside of that particular demographic or an element to the clarity of the message, you create a dilution of the strength of that particular asset that you're using to make that happen. Is that a fair way to regurgitate that?
Right. For example, if you go and talk to a person in a particular niche, even if you take an example of a copywriters, you can hire any copywriter. They all can research and write well. But if you talk about copywriters who are experienced in a particular niche, they know right out of their mind, okay, these are the words which make sense. These are the words which will convert. These words in this sentence, this flow, this particular format works well for them because they have tested it. They have proven it. So they don't have to go through, because when you do a research, all that you find is the statistic and the language and the words to use, but you still don't know how to put them together until you have that experience binding you. So that's one of the reasons why copywriters always look at other sales pages, successful sales pages, to extract these ideas from, and they try to model it. But by end of the day, when you're looking at marketing, specificity is what wins.
So this is why it's important for anybody who doesn't have their experience that they want to have written out, drawn out. I like to draw my goals because they're easier to digest on a daily review. But if anybody out there is listening, for our listeners to take and understand what you want to accomplish ultimately with a piece of content, begins to align our words it begins and start picking out those words that mingle with that experience. Write the experience out and look at the words that you use multiple times and get that experience deeply embedded in your head. Even as a content creator who is, you know, let's say the experience, let's say I'm doing this for a client and I'm creating content for a client, I want to embed myself, immerse myself in the experience the client, the prospect is having as much as possible so that the fabric of who I am shape-shifting into during the time I write that content is true. And if, you know, we're serving clients that are surfers, we ought to be out in the water surfing ourselves to get a very concise and multi-perceptive angle on whatever it is, the element that we're selling, because we can't put a price on that alignment. It is magical. The moment you have full alignment with the prospects that you're talking to, that's when prospects come to you and they want to be involved in what you're doing and they want to give you money. It totally changes the game. So our amplification process, once we have that on a very low level, able to be amplified in a single piece of content, we repurpose it, we distribute it all over the web across 65 or more channels, and the results is what we get at keydifferencemedia.com/case-study. We get clients who had the clarity of voice and the assets we pulled together for them magnified that clarity of voice, and the magic just happened. And it's amazing because when you write a story and you create characters that start talking back to you and start guiding the story. I mean, have you ever had a story where the character just made like a complete 90-degree turn and you were compelled to follow it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
It's a 90-degree turn, but it came from that character. So it's still in character.
Oh, that's awesome. You're right. It's still in context. It's still... You are able to hear from that character and trust it. Is that fair to say?
You have to. You have to trust it.
So as we... As we approach clients, if we bring their experience onto the table, we can start trusting their own vision, and that trust that we place in their vision, that is one of the most powerful elements of attraction that content can have, whether it's from a story standpoint or a single piece, in the lap of those who are reading it. And it starts to kind of devise this way to get rid of the obstacles in front and bring clients to you in a natural, magical way. That's the fun of storytelling. I think that's the fun of collaboration, is because we're connecting to all those pieces. Samantha, what is it that motivates you most about collaboration? What is it that makes collaboration so much more fun as a way of approaching, whether it is yourself, your influence of any kind, your business, et cetera?
Well, I learn more. I see other people succeeding. Like, I'm motivated by the we rather than the me. One of the things I love about collaboration is experiencing multiple parties increasing their capacity all at once. I'm motivated by the win-win-win of it. I'm motivated by tribe, by identifying my work as part of a bigger movement. And I would say I'm motivated by the learning opportunities, because working collaboratively often, you know, provides those 50-degree turns, you know, those 360-degree turns where, as a character, if I make myself into a character, what I get is the opportunity to shift direction in a way that is effective for my own success.
Nice. So in this conversation, I've been kind of just guiding it down a certain path. I really appreciate you all playing along with me, and you've validated a lot of the approach that we are crafting from the perspective of going towards a 4D market, as we have coined it ourselves, and that these inner 40 characters live inside of all of us. And when we bring them to the surface and make it so that we interact with them, then our speech is powerful and our intention is pure and our actions tend to line up with that particular motivation, and the sales just come. They're kind of a byproduct. The influence comes. The desire to have your voice heard just naturally shifts in your favor because we've aligned all these things up. So I'm curious if anybody is sitting here chewing at the bit going, but we missed this major piece of the conversation. Is there any of that sitting out there? All right. I thought maybe anybody would want to wrap it up with something else. Our movement forward is to get this 4D story shaped up. And we already have a plot. We already have a scene sequence. We understand the demographic of the target audience that we're going after. And we're going to continue to lean on Chiwa for direction along this line and bring multiple writers in under her to be able to paint the scene and to be able to give this 4D story a lot of color as the scenes unfold. And the way a 4D story goes out and gets perpetuated is not any different than regular content marketing moves out across the internet. We're doing the same thing, except that we have the continuity of a fictional storyline and the ability to embellish those characters at a high level and at an entertaining level in order to make the 4D story sticky and connect to you. But you're sitting there saying, okay, well, I'm more about the content that I'm producing, and I need a way to amplify that. And the bottom line is, gather those assets together that you have that speak to that target audience the best, and then get those things together and strategized in a way that you know is going to relate to that target audience, and find the magic in that. Find out where the right words are. Find out whether it's male or female in its leaning, and start collecting assets and pieces of assets that will continue to reinforce that unconscious alignment between you and your prospect. And then find a way to repurpose all of those pieces and then amplify them. And if you do, you'll recognize that whole process just allows you to reach out and connect with more and more people that are already in tune to your message. And Key Difference Media, this is what all of our programs do. We come up beside a client and bring them into that space to be able to do that. And then through all of our systems and tools and programs and resources, we're able to monetize the very tools that we're using all the way up to putting people through a sales funnel and adding value from your products that you're creating to their lives. And that process becomes regenerative. It becomes sustainable because they want to go and tell other people about what you're doing. They want to feedback into your story because your story is part of their story. And if I were to sum it all up, that's kind of what we're doing. We're trying to move forward with a story that we collect other people's like stories around and show them the value of that connection. Is that a fair way to put it there, Mr. Key?
Yes.
All right, well, we're creeping up on the two-hour mark where we definitely don't want to cross that line, and maybe we'll have already lost the fair share of our listeners. But anybody want to throw anything out there, add any element to this conversation?
I just want to say that this has been a wonderful melding of minds. I have really enjoyed this, and I look forward to the next time we get together.
There's never a shortage of ideas around this group. We followed a specific mindset today, didn't talk so much about the things that we are physically doing in the business space to move things forward. But we have set here kind of a tone that later we can dive more into to talk about sales processes that support this kind of approach to content marketing and this kind of approach to the industry. We can take apart the more philosophical elements of it that Samantha is able to articulate better than anybody, and you can break those down and really find out how to put leverage on different elements of your products with those kind of awarenesses, with those kind of systems that you see working in other places, including in nature and, representations all around us. So that's what we are continuing to do. Our sales teams will follow this ideology. Our product releases will follow this. And I believe we'll see a lot more of the way holistic businesses approach the market to involve this and involve us emotionally in their products in such a way that it serves that higher unconscious self that each of us are. Well, thank you all for joining us today. And this is the 4D Leverage Blog Talk Radio Program. You can find Mr. Key over at keydifferencemedia.com. And you can also go to keydifferencemedia.com/dominate to discover the domination kit to help you amplify yourself across social media. What is the best place to find you right now, Samantha?
Oh, you can find me at SamanthaSweetwater.com.
Perfect. Mr. Key, do you have any other URLs you want to throw out there?
No.
And Chiwa, where can we find you and your ghostwriting and your book publication offerings
and
services?
My team and I work at awrite2know.com, and that's right at like in writing. So it's awrite, to know, awrite2know.com.
Awesome. Having you write someone's book with all of this marketing intuition, I would imagine, makes for a very powerful ghostwriting project in the marketplace as well as from an entertainment perspective. So that's where you can find everybody. Thank you again for your day and your time, and we look forward to catching up with you this time next week, Wednesday morning, 9 a.m., the 4D Leverage Blog Talk Radio Program, where we amplify the movers and shakers of the emerging economy with content marketing and other 4D strategies. Everybody have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.